She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And today, I promise you, we will not tell you what to think. We just want you to, and think you shall. Thank you for joining us, and thanks to the sponsor of our show today, Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona, where their business is changing lives, and indeed they do. And I don't know about your community, but I know about my community. I see evidence of that frequently. What a great organization, and thanks for your support of Mrs. Green's World. Joining me today is Rudy Socha. And Rudy is the CEO of Wounded Nature, which is a nonprofit organization working to clean up the environment by employing veterans reentering the civilian workforce. You have to say there's certainly no downside for that. You got to love it. Welcome, Rudy, to our show.
Good morning. How are you doing today, Ms. Green?
I am just making it a great green day. So thanks for being with us and sharing what you're going to share. And I just have a few quick announcements, and then we will get on the show, and it will be all about you. Okay?
Excellent.
Okay. A little shout out that Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 radio network, where my shows can be heard every Monday and Tuesday at Dream Vision 7 Radio. Mondays and Tuesdays, as I said, please check them out at dreamvision7radio.com. They have a lot of great shows. They are an internet-based show, but they also have terrestrial radio. Great affiliation. Also, remember, we're live here every Saturday at noon Arizona time at mrsgreensworld.com, and I invite you to join us each week. You can listen on your iPhone or Droid. There are instructions on my website, and all of the podcasts from the shows are on my website within about a day after being broadcast, right there for your listening pleasure, www.mrsgreensworld.com. And of course, you'll want to connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram so that you can know all the great things happening in my green world on a regular basis. If you have questions, email us info@mrsgreensworld.com. And now a shout out about one of our national sponsors, EcoBella. I'd like to think that this is the age of enlightenment. It seems as though everything I read these days talks about the growing number of people who express their concerns about the environment and about people making changes in their lives every day as a result of the concern. So they're taking action. It's not surprising that EcoBella is leading the charge by making available healthy, organic, gluten-free, talc-free, everything bad-free products for your skin and body. And their newest collection to be announced is, of course, the Enlightenment Collection. What I love is when you find a company like EcoBella, you really never have to worry about them harming anything, including our oceans. I invite you to visit their website at EcoBella2C's.com. And if you like what you see and decide to order, enter the code Mrs. Green at checkout and get 10% off your purchase. So now on with the show. If you just joined us, I am interviewing Rudy Socha, who is the CEO of Wounded Nature, a relatively new nonprofit organization that's working to clean up the environment, specifically our oceans, waterways, by employing veterans reentering the civilian workforce. How wonderful is that? Welcome, Rudy.
Hello, Ms. Green.
And where are you, Rudy? You're back on the East Coast, right?
That's correct. Actually, we're based in Charleston, South Carolina, and our primary focus at this point for just getting started is the entire East Coast. And, just to give you an example of the need that's out there, here in South Carolina, we have about 7,200 miles of water of ocean edgeway, and it includes the tidal marshes, the backsides, the islands, etc. About 140 miles of that is the main public beaches, and those are pretty well maintained by the cities since they're very important to generating tourist dollars. But the rest of the waterways the outer islands in the rural beaches are generally used by boaters for picnics and to have parties. And unfortunately, too many of them leave their trash behind. And there's no other organization out there right now that's actually, you know, putting together the resources to go out and clean these areas. And these are the areas that are very important to wildlife reproduction. And so as a result, when the chicks are born, they first go down the ground level to feed. They end up consuming a lot of plastics, and you end up with a high percentage, a high mortality rate. If they don't consume the plastics, what will happen is many times they get pinned in by fishing line or ropes or even a plastic bag that's left on the beach. So there's a big need to get out there, clean this stuff up, and bring it back, get it placed in a landfill where it's secured.
Or even recycle it. But that's like really shocking, Rudy, that people come and enjoy the beauty of nature. I mean, it's not really shocking, but it surprises me in this day and age that people will go out, enjoy all of the beauty that nature provides, and then leave it a lot less beautiful than when they came. That's really not so great. But let's just wind back a little bit about you saw the need, but what made you decide to do all of the work that takes in forming a nonprofit? I'm very familiar with that. And to start Wounded Nature, it's like, okay, that's a lot of work. And then to start the organization, and why did you choose to have the plan to employ veterans reentering the civilian workforce, which is so very, very needed and so topical these days?
That's a lot of questions combined.
It is. Let's start with what made you start. I know, man. I roll them out.
Yeah, the need for the nonprofit, first of all, I saw that there was an increase in, and I'd like to go into the cycle of how plastics kill wildlife in a minute, but I saw there's actually an increase in the volume of sea turtles and other animals brought into the rescue centers for rehab. And so I went to look at why, because, you always see these beach cleanups where they give out T-shirts. And what I realized was those were strictly publicity events, and those normally take place at the big public beaches where there's restrooms and, you know, they'll get the news crews out there, and, you know, that's a publicity event. And it takes a lot to find volunteers who are willing to go to an outer island or a rural beach where there are no restroom facilities and are actually going to be out there working for 4 hours a day.
So, Rudy, let me interrupt for 1 second, because that's a deal breaker for me. I just have to inject a little humor, because you and I talked off air, and it's like, to me, restrooms are an essential part of any volunteering I do. So I just want to be totally transparent in that. I would not be your first response team for the rural non-restroom areas. So go ahead. Go on with the flow. So you're going to the hard
that's
places.
that's part of the reason why we need to find a regular crew to do this. The other thing that I quickly discovered was, out of all the money that's donated to all these nonprofit groups that's out there, less than 3% actually makes it into the environment to take any type of remedial action, whether that be for animals, if you're supporting polar bears or black bears or sea turtles or whatever the case happens to be. Less than 3% is actually used to fix their environment.
Rudy, where did you get that info? That's shocking and appalling.
Well, if you think about it, it really isn't. The vast majority of money actually goes to research, and it goes to colleges all around the country for marine research or animal research, and it actually employs a lot of research is good, and a lot of good things come out of it. I mean, that's how we've discovered the impact of plastics. But it employs a lot of college students, and that's how colleges, that's a big source of their funding, is obtaining these research grants. And so as a result, that's the biggest area. The second biggest area is places like World Wildlife Fund or some of these other very, very large nonprofits. they spend most of their time on what they call education, and it's kind of education slash fundraising. They're kind of promoting themselves and promoting, you know, whatever the specie of flavor for that month happens to be, whether it be wolves, sharks, sea turtles, you name it. And if they think that they'll generate funding, they'll spend education dollars on it and start running ads in magazines and publications around the world. So that's the second biggest source of where, you know, where this money actually ends up going. And so if you take those two components, those are the biggest components for taking funding away from actually helping nonprofits or helping the environment itself. And there were a few other components as I went through this, and I looked at two things. I looked at, you know, private foundations, and then I also looked at, oh, I forgot the third thing, which is a big component, and I forget what the percentage mix was, but lobbying and doing legislative matters is big, and there's a lot of organizations, and on the veterans side, you have the IAVA, which is the Iraq Afghanistan Veterans Association of America. They're primarily an organization with about 150,000 donors and members around the country. Good organization, but their focus is not on providing services per se to veterans, but serving, you know, serving them in representing them to Congress or, you know, to our government body. And there's many in the environment, on the environmental side, that do that. I'm trying to think, National Resource Defense Council.
Yes, National Resource Defense Council. I've had them on the show.
That's right. They have about 300 attorneys there in Washington, D.C., And that's all they do, is they pour through all the laws that are written, and then they decide which ones they're going to sue to have appealed. And same thing goes that, you know, relative to the challenging permits that are granted, et cetera. So, you know, that's a large component of funding that's pulled aside that actually is not used in remedial action for cleaning up the environment. So
when you lay that out, it all makes sense. I mean, it does. You lay that out, it all makes sense because there is research. Now, the NRDC also does things, and it is research. It's not an impact, but they do things like the beach report once a year to talk about the dangers of the beaches, including those in South Carolina and where it's safe to swim and where it's not. It's a highly sought after report, but you're right. It's not about changing anything. It's about researching and reporting it. So that's a really good point and giving us all something to think about. Parents and families want to know where they can swim safely. So they're not cleaning up the beaches. They're just reporting, which speaks to your point about a very small percentage actually on the ground working, even in areas where there are no restrooms. I will continue to highlight that. So
there is no other organization going out there cleaning up the outer islands, cleaning up the rural beaches, going into some of these hard to reach areas. And, so most of them are focused on the main public beaches, and that's fine with us. Those need to be done as well. But we're going out to the areas that are really important to wildlife. Now, just to move forward a little bit as to why and what the impact of plastics itself is on wildlife and the impact of trash itself, but I'd like to start with the plastic bottles, and what I want to say is the plastic bottles by themselves is not the big killer of wildlife.
Right.
And what it is the plastic caps, the closures on them, somehow or another seem to always become detached. Now, whether it's because someone's going to guzzle a beverage and they spin the cap off and they throw it over the side of a boat and then they guzzle the whole thing down and throw the bottle over. But the two seem to arrive ashore many times separated. Now what happens is these caps are very colorful, they're small, and they're easy for sea turtles, seabirds, and
dolphins to eat.
Because they think it's food. They think it's food.
That's correct. And they'll consume them. And what happens is these will end up collecting in their intestinal tract. They'll continue eating and consuming food after that until they can no longer fit any in. Well, the food that they consume afterwards will start to digest as a result of the stomach juices in there. It'll start to break down this food, but it has nowhere to pass to. So what happens is they start getting a bellyache, and about a day or two later, they start feeling a little sick. So what they do is they move out of the shallow areas close to shore, and they start heading out to the open water where it's safer. After about 3 or 4 days of being out in the open water, they start to dehydrate because they're no longer consuming food and the liquids are backing up behind them. And they fall into a weakened condition. And then as a result of the food breaking down that they've consumed afterwards, their system starts forming a lot of gas that starts expanding. Two things happen. They start experiencing a lot of pain, and then simultaneous with that, they can no longer submerge because of the volume of gases inside them. And so what happens is once they reach that point and they can't submerge, the seabirds will eventually find them. And unfortunately, the seabirds will land and they'll start eating them. And it generally takes them anywhere from, 6 hours to 12 hours to die while they're slowly being eaten alive as a result of these bottle caps. Now, at the time that the seabirds have grabbed whether it be a sea turtle or a dolphin, most of the animal rescue centers, there's really nothing they can do for the animal at that point. They're really just too far gone.
Okay, Rudy, hold that thought. This is our first break that we're having, and okay. I want to hear more about it. And I want to comment on the process that you described when we get back and learn some of the other reasons how the animals die. Rudy Socha, Wounded Nature CEO, please stay here with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Abbott Taylor. With over 35 years creating jewelry in Tucson, no one has more experience in designing and making diamond jewelry in Tucson than Abbott Taylor Jewelers. Please come in and see some of the thousands of designs we have created, or come in and have us design something original just for you. Whether you're looking for a simple and stylish graduation gift, your engagement ring, or a breathtaking jewelry piece to celebrate an important birthday or anniversary, you can't beat our competitive diamond pricing. With 100% trade-up guaranteed, set in an Abbott Taylor jewelry design, always using earth-friendly recycled gold. Abbott Taylor Jewelers, exquisite jewelry designs and exceptional diamond deals created right here in Tucson for over 35 years. Abbott Taylor Jewelers at 6383 East Grant Road, on Facebook and on the web at atdiamonds.com. Diamond designs for everyone. Abbott Taylor Jewelers.
Can you predict the future? The reality is we can't, but we can be ready for it. Funded by the National Science Foundation, researchers at the University of Arizona are working on a $3 million project to study the monsoon and learn about our changing desert weather, climate, and ecology. Such knowledge will help guide us to a more sustainable future, not just for our desert, but for the world. Now that's thinking ahead. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
It's got advanced technology. It's got major breakthroughs in technology everywhere you look. It's the 2013 Honda Accord. Hi there, this is Mrs. Green, and I want to share with you that after nearly 40 years of heritage, this is the most stunning Accord ever. The highly respected Automotive Magazine raves that the 2013 Honda Accord offers unparalleled talent of goodness. Please visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street in Tucson to check it out and see for yourself.
You can always find things around the house to give to Goodwill. But I have a bigger reason to give. My brother, Jim. When Jim was just 6 weeks old, he had a stroke. He had to rewire his brain to do most things we all take for granted. Thanks to Goodwill, Jim has a job and a sense of purpose. You know how they say your donation to Goodwill changes lives? Well, it's true. Goodwill is the best thing that ever happened to Jim. Please donate today.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to, and we are certainly giving you a lot to think about, or at least our guest, Rudy Socha, who is the CEO of Wounded Nature, a nonprofit organization working to clean up the environment by employing veterans reentering the civilian workforce with a focus on our beaches and our not so highly populated in the spotlight beaches, but the hard to get to places and really making a difference for our sea life. And Rudy, thank you for joining us today. I wanted to comment when we, before the break, it was somewhat painful for me to listen to in a good way, describing the very slow death that occurs as a result of sea life consuming human-produced plastic. So it is devastating. And for as many guests as I've had on the show talking about the shape of our oceans, no one ever took the time to really touch me in that way about what really happens. It's a slow and painful death, and one that is so very avoidable. So, you know, you talked about ingestion and intestinal blockage, and then they can't submerge, and then they are, you know, they're on their way to being eaten alive. What are some of the other obstacles in the oceans that are man-caused, that there are some things we can do, you know, be it raise awareness of and make some changes about? And I think that's only one question, Rudy. That's only one question.
Well, there's actually a couple of other ways that the litter ends up killing wildlife. One of them is entanglements, and that can come from just crawling inside of a plastic bag for a baby bird and being confused and rolling around on it, and suddenly they can't get out, or, you know, some rope, plastic fishing line, plastic fencing even. Some beaches have put up plastic fencing to trap the sand during the winds. And, the storms end up washing that away, and it makes it out to a rural area, and then suddenly it's trapping wildlife. And so what will happen is that wildlife gets trapped and are entangled, and then if it's on the ground on the beach areas, then what will happen is they're trapped in place, and they'll generally starve to death. Once again, another slow process out in the sun. And if it happens to be underwater, one of two things will happen. It will either end up, because they're pinned to that specific location,
right,
they'll either end up drowning or they'll end up starving to death, if it happens to be a fish that can stay alive. Another method is what we've seen a lot of photos of is the limb business, where they'll get, you know, whether it be their neck, their fins, whatever the case happens to be, into a piece of plastic. And then they gradually, as they continue to grow, that cuts off that limb. And then eventually the limb is either amputated or they get an infection in it and they die as a result of that. And I think we've all seen pictures of that, especially when you get the old six-pack plastics that hold the six-pack together.
Right.
And, you know, there's plenty of photos on the internet about that. And then the last thing is, and this happens on a lot of party beaches, for whatever reason, folks end up breaking bottles or leaving metal pieces behind. And sea turtles they have some pretty tough skin. It's almost like an elephant skin, much thinner, though. But what happens is they have so much body weight, when they crawl across that shoreline and they crawl across this broken glass, the weight forced down on their skin areas actually ends up causing a tear in their skin as they crawl across the glass or broken metal or whatever the case happens to be, of trash that's littering the beach. And so as a result, they end up, they'll sit out there in the daytime or in the evening as they lay their eggs. The flies will end up getting into that area, and many times they'll end up with an infection that will start while they're on the beach, and then it'll set in once they reach the water. And either they'll lose a limb at that point, or they'll end up getting pretty sick. They'll float up on the top, and some boater will find them, take them into a rescue area.
So let me ask you this, as you're speaking so passionately and so incredibly informed about these devastating effects that are literally wiping out entire species of sea life, what ignited your passion? What's your background that you know so much and obviously care so much? How did Rudy become the CEO of Wounded Warrior? Tell us a little bit about that journey.
Well, first of all, Wounded Warriors is a different group.
I mean, oh, yeah, I heard that on the Super Bowl, and I said, oh, that's...
Because we get,
Wounded Nature.
We get their phone calls every once in a while, and, yeah, and they're a very niche organization that... but we won't go... But at any rate,
Wounded Nature. I apologize for that.
Yeah. Okay. And our website's woundednature.org.
Yes.
But, I've always had a love for wildlife. And, I've been involved in charities as a volunteer for a long time. I spent about 20 years with the Boys and Girls Clubs with a number of my friends up in Cleveland. And we ran their alumni association strictly as a volunteer group. And then I did spend a couple of years operating a media company focused on the zoo and aquarium industry. And then that's when I first became aware of the aquariums along the East Coast that were increasingly spending more and more time and money rescuing sea life or having rescued the animals brought to them. And so as a result, I started to investigate why, and then I realized no one else is doing this. And so I said, well, there's a need out there, and let me go ahead and get started. And it's much different taking an operating group like the Boys and Girls Club and working with them than it is starting from scratch where you don't have your own followers. And also, just getting the initial funding, getting your board set up, and then getting through all the government regulations. Most people don't realize this.
You're not kidding.
What's that?
You're not kidding. I mean, I know the journey. It's arduous, and only the very committed get through to the other side.
Most people don't realize it. It's a 14-page application with a lot of attachments just to obtain your 501c3, and then you have to obtain certificates of authority to operate in most states around the country wherever you plan to conduct any type of fundraising. So I've gone through that process, and we're on the other side now. And so we're actually out there looking for corporate sponsors, donors, volunteers, and we have a lot of in-kind needs as well. So I think there's an opportunity for almost anyone that cares about the ocean to visit our website and find a way to help us.
And I would definitely like to talk about that before the end of the show and specific ways that we can help. So let's move to what are some of the targets that you'd like to start with or that you've been involved with so far on the East Coast?
Well,
we had Hurricane Sandy.
What we're trying to arrange for the early part of next month, since we don't have our own boats yet, is a large volunteer effort, including volunteer boats, to do several of the offshore islands. There are huge rookeries here in South Carolina. We've actually been given a list by DNR of places they would like to have us go and clean up. The list is long. They're not able to do it. As a matter of fact, for this part of South Carolina, their total budget at the state level for cleanup is $600.
You're kidding me. In South Carolina?
No. this is South Carolina. And this is not unique. That's pretty much the same once you get away from the tourist areas all the way up and down the East Coast. And so most of the Department of Natural Resource groups or Division of Wildlife have areas that they're very aware of, that they know that it's seabird rookeries or a lot of sea turtles nest there, and there's a lot of trash out there, and they believe that there's a high mortality rate, and they don't have the money to either study the bird death or, you know, they actually get out there and clean up the trash that's out in these areas. So they've asked us, and you know, and we get requested all the time. Unfortunately, at this point, we don't have the resources. Immediately after Sandy, within the first 3 days, I'd received close to 30 calls from Sandy impact area asking if we could put together veterans in boats and get them up there. And this was from the disaster officials, including FEMA. And unfortunately, we couldn't find volunteers who were willing to, in volunteer boats combined, that were willing to go up into that area and clean it up. And so, you know, we're planning to go into that area, hopefully at the end of March, with some volunteers that we now have available, and do some work up there, clean up the small particle debris. Most of the big structures have already been removed, but there is no funding available at any level to clean up the rest of the debris that's out there.
You know, when something like Sandy occurs and there's such massive devastation, I mean, I think in this particular case, a lot of things were handled well, but it's so massive and so ever present. It's there are layers and layers and layers and goes on for years. How do you, as an organization, first of all, I'm very impressed that they knew of you, since you are a relatively new organization, and you couldn't answer the call then, but you are putting things together to answer the call and the little pieces. That's a tough one. How do you integrate on the ground and coordinate with other nonprofits that might be there? That's another huge thing. It's not as hard as applying for a 501c3, but what do you do as the CEO to make sure that you're going to be able to have, you know, a coordinated, not duplicated effort, and that your, you know, people know you're coming? How does that all work?
Well, that's a good point. And, you know, a little dirty secret of the nonprofit world is most nonprofits don't want to expose their members to another nonprofit working in the same space.
That's really sad.
And there's a reason for that, and that is that their donors will probably only write them one check a year. Most people will write like one check for an environmental group, one for an animal shelter,
right,
one
right.
for kids, one for veterans, et cetera. So they don't want to expose that donor base to another nonprofit that's working in the same space. So within the nonprofit world, there is a lot of coordination between, and generally we get along if we're in the same space, but they don't want to do events together. For us, that isn't a problem because, first of all, we're going into an area that no other nonprofit is, you know, it's not an area that anyone else focuses on.
Right, you're not wanting to be in the spotlight.
As I said before, most of the nonprofits that do beach cleanups, they do a symbolic beach cleanup that's generally in an area right adjacent to the restrooms where it's easy to get the media and a lot of volunteers out for a very short cleanup, and then they give them a T-shirt. And it's more of a branding public relations event for the nonprofit than it is anything to help the environment. And, you know, for us, ours is just the opposite. We're going to a remote area. We probably will not have any media out there, you know, on some of the some of the areas that we're cleaning, and most people are not going to get a T-shirt when they're done.
Okay, so let me ask you this.
It's a much different event, and so we're not, ours isn't so much an event as it is a mission, and what we're actually out there doing a job rather than staging a publicity event.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think there is some value in the publicity events in that it does raise awareness, it does put a spotlight on what the challenges are, and that possibly as a result more people will get involved? Because I really understand what you're saying, but I think that there is sometimes added value in just raising the awareness, and the actual people that get the T-shirts probably don't care about the T-shirts. So when I go to these events to volunteer, it's nice, it reminds me, but I'm really there to work and volunteer and make a difference. So do you think that there's a happy medium somewhere about the...
I think wholeheartedly there is, and I think it really creates awareness, provided that nonprofit is doing the educational part when they have everyone out there of explaining the why rather than just generating publicity and looking for donations for themselves.
Right. So that's,
I've gone to other people's beach cleanups and just see how they're conducted. And I've seen many times where people sign in to get their T-shirts. And so they're given their street address, their name, their phone number, et cetera, which puts them on the mailing list.
I understand then, how that works.
Yeah. and then they're, it's been as little as there's plastic bags over there and there's gloves, grab one of each and meet back here in about an hour and a half.
And see what you can do. Yeah. Yep.
Right. But they miss the whole education part is, why are you out there picking this stuff up,
Yeah, here's a dead sea turtle.
Why not just leave it there? Does it really hurt anything, sitting out there in the environment? Is it possibly making a home for a small crab or something? And the answer to that is no. When the plastics do decide to break down, they actually emit a poison, petroleum product.
Okay, we have to take another quick break. Rudy, sorry to cut you off. Rudy Socia, okay. CEO of Wounded Nature. When we get back, we're going to find out what he does with the trash and his vision for 2013. Stay here with me.
Go deep underwater without getting wet. Study bugs like a real scientist. Make your shadow move in colors. These are just three reasons to visit the exciting hands-on new exhibits at the Children's Museum Tucson, the region's only museum just for kids. For 25 years, we've ignited kids' imaginations at the Children's Museum Tucson. That's something to celebrate. And admission is only $2 on the first Sunday and on the 25th of each month this whole year. Children's Museum Tucson, where imagination and learning connect.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some exciting news. The all-new 2013 Honda Accord is here. It's got a new level of sophistication. It's an efficiency expert, and when you drive one, you can discover how EcoAssist can help you increase your fuel efficiency. For a record 26th time, the Honda Accord has been named to Car and Driver's esteemed 10 Best list. To check them out, visit Chapman Honda at 4646 East 22nd Street. They have a great selection of 2013 Accords in stock right now.
Can academic research really save the planet? This year, the University of Arizona took full ownership of Biosphere 2. With 5 ecosystems enclosed in over 7 million cubic feet of sealed glass, Biosphere 2 is a premier facility for environmental research, where the top minds in the world will come together to address some of humanity's greatest challenges, such as climate change. Now that's using your brains. The University of Arizona. Big questions, bold solutions, better tomorrows.
Are you thinking about swapping out your old items for new? Think Habitat when you do. Don't trash it. Have a store it. Habitat for Humanity Tucson will resell your donated furniture, appliances, and building supplies and use the proceeds to build affordable homes in the greater Tucson area. Call now at 520-889-7200 for a free pickup. You can bring your donations to Habitat's Have a Store at 935 West Grant Road, just a quarter mile east of I-10. For more information, go to habitattucson.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks to the sponsor of our show, Goodwill Industries of Southern Arizona. Joining me is Rudy Socha, who is the CEO of Wounded Nature, which is a nonprofit organization working to clean up the environment by employing veterans reentering the civilian workforce and going to places that some of us probably wouldn't go. And that's one of the things I love about this interview. Please remember to follow Mrs. Green on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram, because we want you to stay connected. So, Rudy, happy to have you here. And really, your passion shines through, a tribute to that. So let's talk about, you are going to be working in South Carolina, hopefully New Jersey, in the Sandy Hook area. And I told you earlier, I am a Jersey girl and swam many, many, many summers at Sandy Hook. And the devastation there has just been beyond my understanding. And then I want to know what you do with the trash once you get it. Are there different opportunities for recycling it? And how do you handle the waste once you've collected it?
Okay, well, a couple of things. Much of what we pick up, I'll get into the waste. First of all, most areas, in we've done some smaller cleanups already, and where we've done them at the point that we brought everything to a collection point, we were able to have trash containers available that, you know, could take the recyclables versus the non-recyclable materials. So,
right.
So far I've been lucky on that. I don't think that's going to be the case in all instances. One of the things that we want to be careful about is, as we stage cleanups, not contributing to the problem. And what amuses me and what I've seen before in the past is I've been to different environmental events and they're giving out free bottles of water because it happens to be an extremely hot day.
Oh my gosh.
And if it happens to be a litter cleanup, you know, along roads or whatever the case.
Yeah, that one gives me, that's like really, really a killer for me. It's a deal breaker. You're so right. I just had to go a little bit off the grid there. Yeah, it's awful.
Yep, no problem. And then they give out plastic trash bags. Well, my thought process is, why not have people bring burlap bags or the reusable grocery bags that so many people have accumulated at environmental events, you know, where they give out the free bags, and have them bring their own bags, which is what we use and usually take with us, and then we just dump those. So we're not adding additional plastics to the trash stream by generating a cleanup event to remove the plastics from the environment.
There is just, how come people don't see the irony there? I know, I go to environmental events and I walk in and I've just become the plastic bottle, you know, which, and I say, really, this is an environmental awareness event and you're serving plastic, and it's, there are so many easier alternatives. So that's another show. So go ahead.
Yeah.
So that's one of my hot buttons, plastic bags and plastic bottles, public enemy number one and two.
Yeah. So I know, you're definitely a soulmate when it comes to, seeing the irony in some of these situations when you do attend these events. And we want to make sure we don't fall into their trap. And it's not always possible. And so, you know, we do understand extenuating circumstances. And, you know, but actually on our website, you know, we tell people, you know, that you want to volunteer, you want to help us. Here are the things you actually should bring yourself. And, you know, we kind of explained that to them. We actually do have a beach cleanup procedure. And what we'd like to find out is, you know, maybe 2 years down the road, we'd like to be able to have some comparisons. And what I'm curious to know is, what's the trash makeup of litter we pick up you know, in South Carolina versus one of the northern states where they have a bottle deposit.
Right, right.
You know, does that reduce the amount of plastic bottles we'll find on rural beaches? Or, you know, are we still finding the same number of bottles, but they just happen to be glass instead?
You know, I just want to interject here very quickly because it's so relevant. One of my favorite Super Bowl commercials was the one about SodaStream, and I actually researched it after the Super Bowl to make sure that I was statistically correct. But it said in the commercial that in the Super Bowl, the Super Bowl Sunday alone, 500 million plastic bottles are consumed. Now, that seems like a ridiculous number, but when you think that 66 million people watched the Super Bowl and they had parties and you have numerous drinks, so it's like this is a real problem because they all had to go somewhere. Probably less than a third of them went to landfills to be properly recycled. But that's another show too, Rudy. We're thinking up a bunch of other shows. So you'd like to have some applied research from what you do in addition to cleaning up the beaches.
Some research. I just tried SodaStream, by the way.
I know. We have it, and we love it. We love it.
First of all, the product tastes great. And it is fairly easy to use. And not only do they have soda beverages, they have things like lemonade, they have energy drinks, they have almost everything you can buy in the store in a can or a bottle other than alcoholic beverages right now.
I have a big shout out for SodaStream. I'm glad you tried it. We are a really big SodaStream family. Our children have it, and we got it for a Christmas present two Christmases ago. And we're living examples of we drank club soda out of the cans, and we just don't have to do it anymore. So, yeah, let's hear it for SodaStream. Maybe they'll be sponsors of Mrs. Green's World and Wounded Nature. Let's get on that after the show, Rudy. We got to always be thinking of those things. So, okay.
That's correct. But we think it's just as important to identify the types of waste, and then that also translates to who's actually polluting the environment. And I'm sure you know the story of Keep America Beautiful and how that was founded.
I do, and think about the impact that had. I mean, it's definitely telling everyone how old we are, but I remember when that campaign was started and how they basically, I don't like to use the word attacked it, but how they attacked it and what an impact it had on our country. So that's a good one to bring up.
Yeah, that was the foundation for getting rid of recycling bottles, beverage bottles. And even today, Matt McKenna, who runs Keep America Beautiful, is the former CFO of Pepsi. And they're a very clever organization. They do some good, but they're funded entirely by, well, I won't say entirely, but the majority of their funding's from the beverage industry, and they look out for the beverage industry's best interest. And even using their statistics that, you know, 44% of the plastic bottles are recycled within the beverage industry, which I think, you know, is just, you know, baloney. But, you know, once again, statistics can read any way you want, depending on how you do your study. That still leaves a tremendous amount. That still leaves billions of bottles that either get littered every year or actually make it into a landfill and, you know, take up a tremendous amount of space.
The numbers are staggering. I love to run the numbers and put them on my Facebook page occasionally, and it's just, it blows me away. Well, let's talk a little bit more about your vision. Is the model that you are funded to do, or that you hope to be funded more to do, one where you will actually, you'll coordinate volunteers, but you will employ veterans? Is that part of your vision to employ?
That's correct. We will have full-time employees that, we'll have both full-time employees and then transitional employees. The veterans will end up spending 120 days with us. not only will they handle the cleanup aspect of going out and cleaning up these rural beaches, but they will be spending time learning public relations, making public appearances, and doing the educational part of, letting the public know why they shouldn't be out there leaving their trash behind, and also what the impact of litter is on wildlife itself. Then, and they'll also learn boat handling skills and a few other things. Then at the end of their 120 days, we have a number of large corporations that want first crack at these employees, and then we'll take in another set and work them through. Our boat captains will stay as employees year-round. And what we will end up doing is throughout the year, our first boats will be focused on the East Coast, and they'll run from Key West all the way up to Maine. And the boats are just as important to clean up these rural beaches as they are to attend port festivals and other public events along the way and do the educational part of interacting with the public and letting them know, you know, about our mission and why it's necessary. We also eventually long-term would like to have a boat down in the Gulf. BP will be done with everything that they're committed to do, I believe, in about a year and a half. And so there will no longer be any BP funds available for anything in the Gulf of Mexico.
And still lots to clean up, right?
Right.
The mess won't be
so
gone.
All the accumulated waste that's coming ashore, and actually right now they're starting to get, there was a great cleanup after the oil spill, but now the only cleanups that are taking place that are funded by BP happen to be those that are oil related, and so there is a lot of new trash that's been accumulating down there. And then we do get lots of calls on the West Coast. California just has no funding for environmental cleanups, et cetera. They're barely able to pay most of their public servants right now due to their funding crisis. And then, you know, you have the added problem of tsunami trash coming across and the trash that's floating out there in the ocean that's gradually breaking down, the larger pieces do make it to shore. And there's no funding in Oregon, Washington, or Alaska for those things out in the rural areas neither.
Which is just really another thing that's rather shocking to me, given the state our oceans are in. So, Rudy, with your passion and your commitment and your knowledge, what are your hopes for the very, very challenging part of fundraising? I mean, it's a challenging time. I am one of the people that believe that there are billions of dollars out there and corporate stewards looking to find the right places. Do you hope that are you going to do an integrated approach where you'll take any small donation to the corporate sponsor and everything in between? What is your, for a better lack of better term, your business plan for growing the organization financially?
Actually, we do want to take that approach. We want both corporate sponsors and individuals to be involved. Also, there's a lot of very high net worth families out there that are looking for causes.
Yes.
And we'd like to find one or two of those. And many of them will end up sponsoring something that's a passion of theirs. And then, you know, there's a lot of kids out there that are wealthy that do not have the same focus, I'm just trying to think of a good way of putting it, as Paris Hilton. And, you know, as a result, they do spend a lot of time doing good things, and they're looking for causes to be involved in. And as you're well aware of, the problem is getting in front of these people and having someone pass our name, tell them, hey, have you taken a look at woundednature.org's website, and getting our website out in front of them, and then getting them to either send me an email or pick up the phone and call me.
And there's no doubt in my mind, my new friend, that you'll find it because it's so clear what your passion is. We are at the end of the hour. I told you that time would fly. Please, everybody, visit woundednature.org. You can find out a lot of very interesting information. Rudy, good luck. I hope you'll stay connected. I hope you'll put the show up on Facebook. We will be promoting it. I wish you the best, and I'd love to have you back in a year telling us about all the great things. We have Terry Gellenbeck on Tuesday night from the city of Phoenix talking trash with us. And on February 23rd, Amy Korst, author of The Zero Waste Lifestyle. Find it all out by MrsGreensWorld.com website. Make it a great green week. Thank you, Rudy.
Thank you, Mrs. Green. I appreciate you helping us get the word out.